business success usually comes to those who are too busy to be looking for it. Join RVK for the award-winning RV on Business Show every Tuesday at 12 midday. It's not about thinking out of the box. There is no box. Only on 101.9 Chai FM.
Welcome to 101.9 Chai FM. We are 1 minute late, 11 minutes past 12. Thank you so much for joining us, and it's a pleasure to be with you as always. Last week, we obviously sparked a lot of interest talking about the interest rate, excuse the pun, how it works, what it's all about. And we've got a lot of questions about home loans, how they work, how the interest rate works, how one should pay them off, what is the best way to handle all these things. So what I've done is compiled a lot of your questions, put them together, and hopefully as I go through the main points, we'll answer a lot of the questions that were asked and we'll clarify a lot of the confusion. The first thing that we need to do is just take a step back and understand this concept that you can go and purchase a home, a house, for example, that says worth R1 million. Your savings are nowhere near that. You don't even have R10,000 in the bank. But yet, if you show your income to the bank and you show the bank your credit worthiness, in other words, that you run your accounts well, nothing bounces in your account. In other words, debit orders don't are not honored because there's not enough money in them, then the bank is prepared to lend you credit. In other words, the bank is prepared to say, okay, this person can afford, let's say, R15,000 a month in order to for us to lend them R1 million to buy a property. Because they earn X amount of money, usually three times the amount of the repayment. But now, for the last many years, they take everything into consideration. All your expenses, that's your rates and taxes. You as a family, what do you spend? So, for example, if you've got R30,000 coming into your bank account every month, and the last two or three days on the month, your balance is zero or negative, you go into overdraft, it's unlikely that the bank's going to say to you, you can afford another 14, because practically you can't. But getting a loan or a mortgage or a bond from the bank allows the average person to buy a home where they would never be able to purchase it before. So once you've worked out the practicalities of what you can afford, you can then go look for a home within that price range. That is called pre-approval. You go to your bank, wherever your day-to-day bank, and you say to them, I would like to apply for a home loan, but before I go look for a home, please tell me what I qualify for. You could go to companies like, for example, SA Home Loans, which is a very well-known company and one of the largest independents in South Africa. And you can say to them, I would like to buy a home. What information do you need from me in order to give me an idea of what I can spend? Once you've done that, you've taken care a lot of the pain. You've handed in your bank statements. You've handed in your salary slips. You've handed in a list of assets and liabilities. You've handed in an income statement, your income and your expenditure. You've put everything on the table. And remember that whatever you put on the paperwork needs to be reflected in the bank account. For those of us who, or those of you rather, who earn salaries and you earn one salary and it is deposited into your bank account, it's pretty straightforward. When you're self-employed and you run it through a little company and you pay yourself a salary as and when, or it's a husband and wife working together, it becomes a little bit more complicated. You need to remember that it's all good and well for tax, and it's all good and well to work things and structure things with your accountant so that SARS is taken care of in the most efficient way. But when the bank looks at providing a loan, they look at things in a different way. And you need to be patient and you need to be able to provide the bank with the information that they need. So if you are self-employed or you're running a business, Make sure that your accountant is on board when you go along and you do these applications, because they will require bits and pieces of paperwork. So we discussed last week about the prime rate, the rate that is the benchmark for lending money, and that is what the bank would look at. So let's take a prime rate at the moment, for example, 11.5%. That is the target that you're looking for. You're looking to get a loan around about there. If you feel that you're a good client of the bank, you've run your accounts well, you have savings, you have other assets, et cetera, you can put pressure on the bank to reduce that rate. Unfortunately, if you're someone who hasn't got those credentials, you might be able to get a rate 1 or maybe 2% above that rate. So you are penalized for not running your bank accounts well. So the screaming question would be, that makes no sense practically. If I don't run my accounts well, and now you're charging me even more, you're giving me less of an opportunity to run my accounts well. What the bank is really saying to you is that we are taking a risk on you, and that risk is going to cost you 1 or 2%. In other words, the interest that you pay back is going to be higher than the average person, because that is the penalty that you will pay for us taking the risk on lending you money. A question just coming, is buying a home a good investment? I think we'll do that next week, because it's a whole discussion and I would like to bring someone in to bounce that idea off. But the bottom line is, the average South African's biggest single asset is their home. And if you look at people who bought homes, whenever it is, there's always a period of increase at plateaus, and then it increases again. We just don't know how long that plateau is going to be. We've gone through times where that plateau has actually been a slight decrease, a market crash, COVID, times like that, where there was no demand and therefore prices were stagnant. But if you're in an area where there is demand, you will find a steep increase from time to time. Okay, so now you've got your bond. The bank says to you, okay, we've assessed you, we can afford to give you your mortgage, as they call it, and you are now all excited and you're really, really happy to go forward with it. But all of a sudden, you get a call from a transferring attorney called a conveyancer, and this firm says to you, you need to pay us money. And you call the bond originator, or you call your bank, and you say, who's this person? What is this all about? So I think most people are not that naive and know exactly what's going on. But let's break down for you step by step what the other costs are that you would incur when you buy a home. There are certain once-off costs that are incurred when you buy your house. Those are fees that are payable and taxes that are payable. And then there are other amounts that are payable monthly. So if you're moving out of your parents' home into your own place, all of a sudden, those costs that you didn't know what they were, that your parents incurred, are now going to be yours. If you lived in a sectional title in a block of flats and you paid a levy and certain costs were covered by your levy, all of a sudden you're going to be responsible for that. But let's take a quick break. I need to take a quick advert break. We'll be back with you in a moment.
This is RV on Business.
Right. So now you're all excited. You've got your pre-approval from the bank, and you know how much you can go and spend on a property. You find something that suits you. And let's say we're talking about a house where you need to pay all the associated expenses. The first thing you need to know is what percentage of bond you're going to get. Is the bank going to require you to put down a deposit? It's usually 10%, it could go up to 20%, or if you have more, you could put down more. But you need to be aware that getting 100% bond is the exception rather than the rule, and you need to make sure that you've got some money to put down as a deposit. Right. That deals with the bond side. Then you've got bond registration fees, and these are paid to the deeds office, and that varies. But to give you a rough idea, bond registration fees are roughly 27,000 rand for 1 million. So you can just multiply it from there. And that's a fee that you're going to pay to a conveyancer. Now, what is the function of this conveyancer, this lawyer? They take everything and they put it all together and they handle the payments for you. So you don't need to go and pay the deeds office, which is the bond registration cost, which we just spoke about. Now you've got transfer duty. Transfer duty is to move it out of the previous owner's name into your name. There is no transfer duty, for example, on new developments, but on a home there would be, and on a home of roughly 2 million rand, your transfer duty is about 17,500 rand. Then you've got transfer costs. That's also attorney's fees. That's for the person to handle the whole thing. There again, about 27,000 rand per million. And you might get initiation fees. The bank asks for amounts to set up a new bank account, etc. But you've got your deposit, your bond registration fees, your transfer duty payable to SARS, and your transfer costs to handle the whole process put together. Those are the fees that you're going to have to pay. And then you've got your deeds office fees, which is really a small amount. It's about 1,500 rand per million, and or might be a once-off. I'm not quite sure how that works exactly these days. I've been out of this game for a while. But your conveyancer will handle all that. So once you've chosen a conveyancer, or a conveyancer has been appointed, they will sit down with you and give you a list of all the costs that you're going to pay. So you just need to be aware of that, and you need to have that cash available. So if you don't have to pay your deposit, you need to make sure that you've got fees available for ongoing costs. Then we talk about the ongoing costs. So now you've paid that, you've just put it out there, paid everything, transfers now gone through. And all of a sudden, you've got to start paying your bond repayments. Then you've got to pay your homeowner's insurance. You own this property. But the title deed, the paper that says it's yours, is held on to by the bank. They hold it until you don't owe them anything. So they hold this piece of paper, but you need to insure the property. So you need to go to an insurance company and say, if this house burns down, if this house gets flooded, if there's damage due to rain and or a geyser bursts, you need to make sure that you can get the house back into the order that it was. And here I just want to point out a few things. I pointed this out in December when we discussed insurance. But number one, you need to insure the property at the replacement cost. If you pay 2 million rand for your house and your house is 10 years old, and God forbid it burns to the ground, 2 million rand is not going to build you a new house. So you might say, well, I'll build something humble. That's not the point. The point is this, and this is a real scenario that happened to a client of mine who came to me crying because this scenario happened. We didn't have the insurance, they had it through their bond. They had a home that they'd bought many years ago in Sandringham, maybe 15 years ago. Winter came, heaters was on, heater caught fire, caught the blanket, caught the bedroom. Bottom line is a bedroom and a part of the passage were burned beyond recognition. No problem. We've got insurance. We'll get it fixed. The insurance comes around and says, we've got a major problem here. This house was insured for 1 million rand, but it's worth 5 million rand. We can only pay you one-fifth of what the damage is worth. And not only that, that's called underinsuring. The insurer has the prerogative not only to pay pro rata, but to maybe not even pay. So it's very important that you have your insurance up to date all the time at the correct amounts. So, right now, you need to pay homeowners insurance. Then, some insurers. Some banks, sorry, will want life insurance. They say it's all good and well that you can afford it now, but if God forbid you don't wake up in the morning, we don't want to be stuck with having to take the house, chuck your family out, put it on the market, sell it, try get whatever we can for it. We just want to know that if you pass away, God forbid, the money will come to us, we settle the bond, and we don't have to bother your family, which is a great idea in any event. That's the next thing. Then you've got something called municipal rates and taxes. And that is everybody in South Africa's bugbear. Within rates and taxes, you've got a few items. So let's start off with the main one, rates and taxes. There's a tax that you pay on your property every month. So that should be a fixed amount. Many, many years ago, that amount was a joke. Property rates, when it came to valuing them, were very low, and they were almost negligible. Those have really been brought in line with market value a couple of years ago. Then you need to pay for what we call utilities, things that you use, your water, your electricity, sewerage, and your refuse. Now, I can hear a lot of people in the background going, yeah, electricity, water, as we say in Yiddish, alavai. The bottom line is that those infrastructure items are there. And when they work, they work. South Africans have had to adapt and make their own plans. But be it as it may, if you have the infrastructure, you need to pay for the utility. So those are another things that come into play. Now, one of the challenges you have in Johannesburg, for example, is that a lot of those expenses are not read accurately every month. They're estimated and then they're balanced on an ongoing basis. There are ways today for you to read it and you to give the readings, and then they're audited, so to speak, from time to time to make it more manageable because you know exactly what you're going to pay based on the figures that you've given in. But just be aware that those things are really very onerous when it comes to it. Your electricity will go up in winter. Your water will go up in summer if you have a pool, if you have a garden. So just be aware of those. If you're living in a sectional title, you've got a levy that you need to take into consideration. Some levies are modest. They can be 2,500, 3,000 rand, depending where. But levies can go up to 10, north of 10,000 rand if you're living in a state that, the levy is worth it. If you have beautiful gardens, if you have communal swimming pools, etc., etc. So those are the things that you need to take into account when you are buying a property. There is another thing that I want to point out, and that is security costs. Security in South Africa is a major cost. Most people have armed response. If you take people in the greater Glen Hazel area, let's call it, most people subscribe to CAP and to CAP security. In other words, they contribute to making sure that there are responsible citizens and make sure that there's fiscus, there's money in the pot to allow those vehicles, that whole system to operate. And then they also hire them as their security company. So that is another major cost that comes into it. Your electric fencing, the maintenance on your electric fencing is ongoing. Your alarms, ongoing maintenance. Those things get broken by the sun, they get knocked by the dog, by the cricket ball, by the soccer ball, whatever it is. Those are ongoing expenses of running a home. And a friend once said to me that a house is a gunniff, which means that a house is a thief. And it feels like it at times where you just feel like you're hemorrhaging money. I remember before we left South Africa and we moved out of our home, and I drove past the Michael Hardware store, and I almost felt like compelled to turn left to go in because I definitely needed something for the house, whether it was chlorine or fertilizer or a tool. All of a sudden, I realized I'm living in a furnished hotel. I don't need anything anymore. But that is the joys and the responsibilities of being a homeowner. Somebody else has fairly pointed out to me, and thank you for mentioning it, because it wasn't on my list, is your moving costs. Moving costs are very, very expensive, and it is a one-time cost. You must just be aware of that. but I'm begging you to please use a mover that is recommended, that is reputable, that other people have used. Number one. Number two, your insurance doesn't cover your move. You need separate insurance to cover your move. Your insurance may cover it, but just get it in writing. And number three, don't be stupid. Don't start packing up all your valuable items when the movers are already in your house, flashing around all these expensive things, and then just throwing them in the box and putting a bit of tape on top. You're asking for trouble. Make sure you're fully packed, everything's closed, everything's marked, and you know what it is before you move. Just appreciate that it's a pressurized job. They come in, they pick the boxes, and they move them. And if you are ready, it'll make life a lot easier for everybody. So I hope that I've gone through a lot of the costs associated with it. And I really don't want to come across as pessimistic, not at all. I am a major believer in buying your home. I'm a major believer in buying it in the right area and really having something that you can call your own. But how do you actually make it your own on paper? I just mentioned that the bond registration company, whether it's the bond registration company or the bank, holds your title deeds. They own that property for all intents and purposes until your bond is paid off. But let me tell you how a bond works. A bond works that there's an interest rate applied to your bond, and you pay off a fixed amount every year, so every month. So, for example, let's get some examples up here that I've done, just to make it a lot easier for you. If you have a loan of 1 million rand, your monthly repayment would, on a 20-year bond, would be roughly 10,500 rand. So that's what you'd be paying on a monthly basis. However, the first 10 to 15 years are only paying interest. So, in other words, in the beginning of your bond, when you look at your statement, when it comes, and it should come quarterly, you can look at it online, look at it on your phone, you'll start getting frustrated. Hold on, I paid, let's just again use a round figure, 10,000 rand a month, 120,000 rand a year, but the amount I owe the bank hasn't decreased. In fact, it says to that I owe the bank more than 1 million rand. It says I owe them 2.4 million rand. How is that? Well, the bank's calculated the interest that you need to pay over the period of that bond, and they've put it all together. And that interest is charged monthly on the remaining capital. So the capital doesn't decrease for the first 10 years, basically, so long as you're paying off the interest. Once the interest starts to decrease, the amount of interest that's really owed, and it comes down to a smaller amount, you start chipping into your capital, and then it comes down. So, for example, on a loan of 1 million rand at the interest rate of 11.5, and you've got a 20-year bond that's 240 months, your standard payment will be 10,714 rand. If, however, you increase that payment by 50%, in other words, another 5,500 rand roughly to 16,071 rand, you will reduce that bond term by half. You'll drop it from 10 years to 20 years. And what you would have done is saved yourself 872,000 rand in total repayments. So, in other words, if you work out what you would have paid over 20 years and you work out what you pay over 10 years by increasing the amount, your saving is 872,000 rand. If you turn around and say, listen, I can't afford a doubling it, but I can afford another 10%. In other words, I can pay another extra 10% on my loan, Then what happens? Your loan top period reduces from 20 years to 14.8, call it 15 years. You save 5 years, and your total saving there would be 471,000 rand, nearly half a million rand that you would pay, that you would save by paying an extra 10%. So the simple answer is, if you can barely afford your bond, but this is what you can afford, go for it. But if you have a choice of taking an extra 10, 20, 30%, putting it into your bond in order to reduce your overall period, the time that you have your bond at the bank, one should definitely look at doing it. You might say, listen, I can't do it monthly, but I do get an annual bonus, and I use that on a really nice holiday for the end of the year. Maybe what we'll do now is spend half of it on the holiday by going somewhere a little bit more down key, because we've got a pool, we can enjoy a home, we can have bras, et cetera, and we'll put half of that into our bond. That's something else that one can look at. We are running out of time as usual. We've got 7 minutes left, and there's a few questions to answer. Someone's just asked, who are the major bond companies in South Africa? So all the big four banks, Absa, Standard, Nedbank, and First National, all offer bonds, and they all have what they call home loan departments. Go there. There are alternative suppliers. Those are SA Home Loans, Uber Home Loans, and Better Bond. Those are companies that either help you shop around, or they themselves will supply the bond to you. The latest kid on the block is Discovery Bank, which is offering home loans. One can go have a look at that also. The last question that I want to deal with is switching bonds. Can I switch my bond? Yes, you absolutely can switch your bond. So if you get a cheaper rate from one bank and you want to move to it, you can do it, but you just need to be aware of what the costs are for the switching. I'm going to go through them with you in a moment. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll go through those costs.
This is RV on Business.
Welcome back to 101.9 High FM. I'm talking about property. Upfront, I'm not paid by the Blue Agency. I don't really know the company as such. I've interviewed them. But if you can get a company like that to help you to buy a property in Israel, and they can help you with the entire process, you would be silly to miss that opportunity. It is so challenging in a different language, in a different culture, in a different way of doing things. Give them a call, and you might be very, very surprised that you could maybe own a property in Israel, maybe not where you want to live, but at least you have an asset. And on that note, just to let you know that looking after your health is absolutely vital. And if you go to Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic for adults, they can help you with your cholesterol tests, your blood pressure tests, and all the tests that ladies need. You can find your Dis-Chem pharmacies, and in the pharmacies, you have the wellness clinics. Please pop around there and get those tests done. They could really save your life. You might be walking around with cholesterol that's scary high, and you are unaware of it. And a little bit of medication from your doctor could just get you back on the right trajectory for a long and healthy life. Right, the cost of switching home loans. You need to cancel the existing bond and register a new bond. So there's going to be cancellation fees from the existing bank, and there's going to be a notice period. They might charge you a settlement fee. You've now got to register a new bond on the property, and you might have to pay transfer costs if the bond is of a higher amount. So there are fees involved, and you need to look at it. Don't freak out when you say, oh, it's going to cost me, for example, 50,000 rand to switch bonds. What's the half a percent saving in interest going to save you over that time? Those are the ways to look at it. And it is an exciting, a very special opportunity to own property. The banks allow us to own something that we could never have afforded. It needs to be something that we can enjoy. Property needs to be maintained. If you buy it, but you can't maintain it, you're going to lose money on it. But if you buy your home in a good area, you're able to maintain it and look after it. The chances are that it will look after you. Besides being a family home, a place for the family to get together, it'll become your single biggest asset that you now own that'll help you to create wealth going forward. Well, I hope this is shed a bit of light for some people. I hope that it's really got those of you who've been renting and not quite sure whether you should buy, interested to go have a look, do your homework, speak to those in the know, and start this journey of owning your home. There is a school of thought out there that currently renting is better. You need to do the homework and you need to speak to people who can help you with that. Craig, thanks so much for pushing the buttons. Thanks everybody for listening. We will speak to you next week.